Welcome to the Leadership Journey Podcast. I'm Aaron Wilson, the host of the podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to various Christian leaders, discussing some of the things that have contributed to the story of their leadership, and at the same time encouraging you as you listen to reflect on your own leadership journey. If you've not already subscribed to the podcast, you can do so for free on iTunes or on Castbox. Look for the Leadership Journey Podcast, and it would be great if you're able to take a moment to leave us a review. This week, Charles McMullen, moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, is back on the podcast. He talks about his ministry in Legacurry, his first charge, and in Westchurch in Bangor, including the story of a fairly dramatic call to that church. He also talks about his experience of the ministry of the Holy Spirit, and he shares a couple of the most significant things he has learned along the way. Enjoy the podcast. Charles, welcome back, and once again, thank you for the time that you've given to us on the podcast. We finished up in the first part of our conversation, quite a dramatic year, 1990. It's actually the year that I went to Switzerland to work in Switzerland. So you were having a lot of turning points,
yes,
in your life, both in terms of ministry and also in terms of marriage. Well, 1990, 1991. Mm-hmm. When did you actually go to Legacurry then?
I was installed on the 1st of March, 1991.
And you got married in May?
2nd of May.
Okay, right. That's a big year.
I got the opportunity to choose the bedroom before we got married then.
Okay.
Get the house sorted out.
Right.
No, not really.
Right. Great. How many years did you spend in Legacurry?
8 years altogether.
Right. Talk us through what was the transition like, going from being an assistant where someone else's, the buck stops with someone else, to actually having your own charge? Was that a bit of a learning curve?
Because I was an ordained assistant in Harnley Hill, it meant that I'd already some practice when it came to taking communion or baptizing babies, conducting marriages, funerals. Yeah. My boss took me step by step.
Yes.
I would have talked everything through with me.
It's tremendously valuable.
Yes, that was a very good experience. And again, so much depends on that relationship between boss and student, boss and assistant.
It doesn't always work as well as how you've described it.
It doesn't, but I had a particularly good experience.
Yes.
And I also, when Harold was off ill, had the place to myself.
Right.
And that was a learning curve in itself, mm-hmm, or a good experience. Mm-hmm. And probably towards the end of your assistantship, you do reach that stage when you're a bit like a bird wanting to find its own wings and leave the nest. So there's the excitement of all of that. Mm-hmm. It's what you've trained for.
Yeah.
It's what you've been wanting. And then your first charge, and I can understand this now, is so special to ministers, mm-hmm, pastors, mm-hmm, where it all began, as it were. And there was that romantic or honeymoon sense, because we basically went as husband and wife.
Yeah.
That's where our three children were born. Yeah. And during my 8 years, the congregation grew by about 100 families altogether, with lots of new blood coming in, different groups that were started, including mums and toddlers. Mm-hmm. And we got an Alpha course up and running.
And that in the 90s?
Yes.
Yeah, because when did Alpha start?
Maybe just a bit before that. Yeah, I can remember going to an Alpha conference in Belfast, uh-huh, and actually being taken not so much by the presentation, but by the real love of Jesus that I saw in the leaders.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, if that's what they have, that's what I want to bring back to the congregation.
Are you a bit of an innovator? Have you been a bit of an innovator in terms of your ministry?
Again, that's very difficult for me to answer personally. Once or twice, yes. Mm-hmm. Hopefully
just
so.
Just when you describe, you know, new programs, activities, new people coming to the church, you know, groups starting, Alpha starting, and as I said, quite you know, fairly early adopter of Alpha. You know, it just makes me wonder, is that... And I wonder if you're maybe being a little modest there.
And I need to ask around. I need to ask a few Presbyterians.
Okay. Well, I'll leave you to do that.
but what would you put the growth down to?
Again, that's a difficult one to answer. You can be doing all the right stuff and yet nothing happens.
Yes. Yes.
Sometimes you can be in a place and it seems good. And maybe I've had this experience once or twice during my present term of office. But you said to yourself, will there be a church here in 10 or 15 years' time? Mm. And yeah, probably to try and answer that question, Alan, I would say there was a certain dynamic of the Holy Spirit at work. Mm-hmm. That 8-year period, towards the end, it was suddenly becoming much more difficult to get a lot less done. When my successor was appointed, he came in and did stuff I am sure that would have taken me another 10 years at that stage.
Yeah, right.
So something very definitely happened, and it was a bit like being carried along on a wave. And changes that occurred in the worship, the church itself was growing. There was a very vibrant youth club. Lots of lives were changed through that. Owning the place and seeing it as my own, wanting to bring the congregational history to life. Mm-hmm. When I came, it was celebrating 150 years. Mm-hmm. So we had a special program of events. Mm-hmm. I can remember returning to the original meeting site of the church mm-hmm. and conducting worship on the back of a horse and cart and then a procession up to the new building. Huh. So those big occasions and getting folk together, yeah. Those are great memories.
Yeah.
We had a flower festival a couple of years after I went there, and I can remember a real debate going on about whether we would charge an admission, mm-hmm. and in the end we decided we would step out in faith. Mm-hmm. And the sense of God's presence during that weekend, mm-hmm. people will still talk about that. Mm-hmm. And we raised something like £13,000. But people were coming back and queuing to get in.
Yeah.
And then during my time there as well, we had what we originally referred to as a festival of faith. I had Sam Miller along. Sadly, is no longer mm-hmm. with us. He would have been Minister of Hazelbank and Coleraine.
I know his name. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Very much an evangelist. Uh-huh. And when he came, it turned out to be an old-fashioned mission in many ways.
Was that not what you were expecting?
Well, it was a celebration of faith, I suppose. Yeah. But why not?
Yeah.
And quite a few people became Christians as a result of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, a dynamic of God's Spirit at work mm-hmm. in the place during mm-hmm. those 8 years, which was mm-hmm. incredibly special. Mm-hmm. In the mid-1990s, I can remember doing a series on the Beatitudes. Mm-hmm. And the first one in particular stood out for me, Blessed are the poor in spirit. Mm-hmm. The analogy I used was of a dry, empty reservoir needing to be filled. Mm-hmm. So no matter how far I continued in this series, I was talking about peacemakers or the pure or those who are being persecuted, I kept coming back to dry empty reservoirs needing to be filled. Couldn't work out what was happening. At the same time, another good friend, and again someone who's had quite an influence on me, Derek McKelvey, mm-hmm. who's the retired minister of Fisherwick, who tried to teach me Greek at Union College and had taken quite an interest in me, tried to persuade me to go on a clergy retreat mm-hmm. called Hensel, which was run by Anglican ministers interested in renewal.
Yeah.
And I had all kinds of excuses. Finally, it was as if he took my diary and tore the page out and said, "You're coming along." And off I went, and the worship and the teaching and the ministry, my first real experience of that kind of personal hands-on mm-hmm. ministry, That had a profound impact on me. Mm-hmm. The second night, as I was about to leave, I wanted to get home. There had been a wonderful time of praise, great teaching time, and then ministry had opened up, and one of the Anglican ministers said that he wanted to pray with somebody who was a dry, empty reservoir.
Oh. Hmm.
But that didn't make any sense to me. Mm-hmm. It was a way above my
head. Those
were
the words that he used.
Those were the words he used. Yeah. The second time I heard them in the distance, I was still saying cheerio to people. And then suddenly he was standing right in front of me saying, "It's you."
Oh, goodness.
Prayed with me. Nothing dramatic happened, I would say. But over the next couple of days or so, it was as if something began to take shape within me, that sense of a new trickle of life. God has always worked in me, I would say, according to my personality, and I would tend to be gentle, I would hope. Mm-hmm. And there was that kind of gentle renewal that took place. Mm-hmm. I can remember at that time as well reading a book by George Carey called The Church in the Marketplace, which described his time as minister in Durham. Church in the city centre, which was open on a Sunday but closed during the week, even though it was surrounded by people. And he tried to open it up Monday to Friday, Monday to Saturday. People started coming in. But in the opening chapter of the book, he describes a crisis in his own life, a really dry period when he began to doubt even if he was a child of God, and cried out to the Lord, "If you're still there, please move in my life." Now, I wouldn't say that I was that desperate in that sense. God was still very much with me. But again, he spoke about a new stream of life and the change that occurred. So all of that happened in Legacurry.
Would you say, just in terms of, obviously something's happening in the church, something's happening in you as well. Would you say that could you pinpoint ways in which your ministry changed after that Hensoul experience?
Yes, I would say that I became much more open to the person and the leading of the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm. And what did that look like, say, in terms of Sunday ministry, or in terms of how you went about visitation, or, you know, just the everyday ministry things?
We had to be out of the church building for a period. We were refurbishing, we were renovating. We met in the hall, and that first summer I just seemed to be on fire in my preaching. And people put it down to us being out of the building. But something had happened in my life much more profoundly.
Yeah.
Preaching my way through the Song of Solomon, for example, and just a newfound love. Uh-huh. Love and grace are very central to me. Uh-huh. So a very real sense in which the flame had been rekindled. And then being alongside people and praying for them in a much more personal way, listening to God and allowing Him, as best I could, to guide me, to ask Him for a particular word of encouragement or insight. So yes, change.
Okay. So that's a hugely formative, almost decade, of life and of ministry. And then talk about the transition to Bangor. How did that happen?
There's a certain inevitability when you're in your first charge that eventually you're going to be approached by another church. Mm-hmm. I was able to shrug that off several times. In the late 1990s, I was involved in the Christian Training Centre of our church. Harold Graham was the director. I was convener of the committee. Harold asked me to lead the devotions at a summer school in Union, and I spoke on the fruit of the Spirit. between sessions, I was having coffee. This man was suddenly standing beside me, the session clerk, the right-hand elder in West Church, and he said to me that the church was looking for a new minister. When I went back to the next session, I didn't hear a word of what was being said. My head was in complete turmoil.
Did you know much about Bangor West at that time?
Not an awful lot. I'd had one or two encounters with the place. The second time I ever met my wife was at Anne Kennedy's licensing service, or her passing out parade from college, and that was in West Church. That was her home congregation. But I didn't really know an awful lot about it. During the summer, put my mind at ease. Now, I'm not leaving Lekkerkerry. I'm very happy here. But it just wouldn't go away. And I can remember one Sunday evening in September, actually saying to Barbara, that's it, we're staying here, when the phone rang, and it was the convener. So at every stage when I wanted to pull out, something kept me in the process. And again, I had something along the lines of what might be described as a Macedonian call, not that I'd ever been familiar with the concept. I can remember sitting in Lekkerkerry Church one morning after harvest, suddenly becoming aware of prayers in another church. Lekkerkerry itself was so full of God's Spirit. There was a lovely sense of peace, and the floral arrangements were still around the various windows. But suddenly that sense of prayers in another place. And when I was being shown around West, again, this is very difficult to explain, but when I went into a particular room, suddenly I knew in my spirit where those prayers had been offered, and found out that there was a particular prayer meeting in that room.
At that time?
Well, it wouldn't have coincided exactly, but there was a weekly prayer meeting.
Right.
And then, again, there were several of us interviewed. We were supposed to do a presentation. The elders will still say that mine was by far the worst. I didn't give a presentation. I said that I was very happy where I was. But if I were to come to this place, these are some of my key points in ministry, but it was very below par. I just did not like the idea of even trying to sell myself. But anyhow, I was then put on a list of three people to speak and said, well, Lord, surely one of the other two will get it. I'll go along with that. And I can remember when the call did come through, I spent my first 24 hours in floods of tears. Not really wanting to leave where I was, but yeah, the two experiences of call turned out to be very different for me. Going to Lekkerkerry, as I said a little earlier, was a bit like falling head over heels in love. This was a case of being brought every step of the way, kicking and screaming, to the altar. I want to fill that out just a little bit more. I was part of a prayer triplet in Lekkerkerry. Prayer had really been transformed in those 8 years. Quite a few triplets and deepening interest in prayer, as I say. One of my prayer partners, a wonderful lady, sadly she passed away quite recently, Ruth Bryans, always said that she got no further than P7 at Galgorm Primary School, but somebody who exemplified the whole idea of being a fool for Christ. I can't describe her in any other way. But she had a picture when we were praying together in Lekkerkerry of a stained glass window. The night of my installation in West, she came up to me, never having been in the building before, and she said, Charles, there's the window.
Oh, wow. My goodness. Yeah.
Now, there are distinctive windows in the place. It's a new building modelled on the shape of a boat or a ship, and a huge window at the front. And then down at the back, a series of panel windows in the gallery. It was one of them that she'd seen. So then again, I battled. Mm-hmm. Well, Lord, why did you not give her the more obvious window? Mm-hmm. And after I'd been in the place a couple of weeks, it was as if the Lord said to me, Charles, that's the window you see. Mm. Everybody else sees the other glass looking up from the church.
Yeah.
And every time over the past 20 years when I've been a bit nervous in the pulpit, mm-hmm. I've just had a little glance up at that window and found it very reassuring. So it was quite a dramatic call.
Yeah, but isn't it remarkable that you've got so many strong elements in that call, and yet you were so reluctant to leave where you were?
Mm-hmm.
It's remarkable that the two things go together, and maybe it needed to be so many strong elements to overcome that reluctance, or to mm-hmm. help you to stop second guessing your decision mm-hmm. when you eventually went.
Yes.
So what were you were following, I mean, quite a, as I understand, you were following quite a, I suppose, a groundbreaking ministry there on the part of David Bailey.
Yes.
He'd gone there in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
I presume at the time that part of Bangor was growing. It's continued to grow, obviously. So was that a kind of an outpost that he'd gone to and had seen it develop, or how had that happened?
It would have been part of what was referred to as church extension.
Yeah.
David returned from India in the early 1960s and started the congregation. People beginning to spill out from Belfast. Yeah. I'm not sure if it was realised at the beginning of the decade to what extent that would actually develop.
It was the 1960s?
Yeah, early 1960s. Yeah. Nobody would have foreseen the Troubles, for example. Yeah. But there was David suddenly building this new church. Mm-hmm. He is an incredibly gentle and gracious man.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, I was back in the church to help celebrate his 90th.
Mm.
He spoke for about half an hour in the pulpit and finished. He was just absolutely radiant, full of the joy of the Lord, full of the love of God. And he finished his talk by referring to Philippians, to live as Christ and to die as gain, longing for that day when the perishable would put on the imperishable. A man and his wife Rhoda, so deeply, deeply loved by the congregation. And yet when I went after a ministry that had lasted nearly 40 years, nobody ever said to me, David did it this way, David did it that way.
Yeah.
I was given freedom to be myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Has he stayed in the congregation?
He lives quite close.
Yeah.
But has worshipped in Ballygilbert. Occasionally he'll look in, and of course he's made to feel very much at home.
Right, but you've not had to deal with the scenario of your immediate predecessor being
there. I've always said that I entered into a godly inheritance.
Yes.
And in many ways, because it was such a pioneering ministry, all the issues that had been raging elsewhere, including worship, that had all been resolved.
Yes, yes.
And suddenly it was as if you were in this wide open space when you went, wondering, where on earth do you go from here?
Because nothing needs changed.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
One of my key mentors would be Selwyn Hughes, Every Day with Jesus. And Barbara and I would use that as our daily devotional. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity of meeting Selwyn on a couple of occasions, and he mentions his visit to West Church in his autobiography.
Uh-huh.
He came along. We ended up hosting CWR Partners Day on the premises. At the end of the afternoon, he said to me that he was going to come and have fellowship. I was scared out of my wits. What was I going to say to a man like that?
Uh-huh.
He was in the house for 4 hours, which just seemed like 5 minutes. And I can remember asking him, Selwyn, how do you take a congregation forward that has experienced so much? And he answered that in two words that made an awful lot of sense, but I'm still trying to work all of it out. Go deeper.
Ah. Well, what does that look like then? How have you gone about that?
There has been, I would say, a consistency and a continuity throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
David in the 1960s, again very far ahead of his time, came into an experience of charismatic renewal. Mm-hmm. As a result of that, the congregation started running what are called Life in the Spirit seminars, a bit like Alpha for slow learners, I would say, very much at the pace of the participants. Mm-hmm. They get to know each other, lifelong friendships are formed as a result. Salvation is explained. Some people actually become Christians at that stage in the course. And then each person is prayed with by the laying on of hands, again, a very gentle ministry. And there would be an exploration of gifts. Mm-hmm. And we've had groups and ministries that have been set up as a result of that, including the Sycamore Club, which is for adults who have special needs. We've 50 to 60 who come from all over Bangor to that.
Did you talk about that on Thought for the Day one morning on Radio Ulster?
Yes.
I remember that.
And the story I told, I got a little bit too big for my boots. I was wanting to tell the club about the cross, and it was an Easter talk, and I carried these suitcases across the front of the room and set them down at an improvised cross and then walked away, and there was that sense of leaving the sad things and the bad things behind and entering into a new life. And I was sure I'd done really well, but one of the members, in a way so characteristic of the club, asked me, "Charles, where are you going in your holidays?" God can keep us humble at times. But anyhow, ministries like that came as a result of people discovering their gifts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in many ways, I was taking all of that forward. Mm-hmm. Preaching in the place, it's a bit like being in a lovely deep river. Mm. There's great encouragement. I could never be in a place where I was ploughing a lonely furrow.
Right.
Sunday by Sunday, every week I've been in that place, somebody has said thank you, or that meant a lot to me, or there's a bit of banter at the door, or whatever. It's a very warm place to be. Mm-hmm. There's a deep spirituality, mm-hmm. as well as a real joy of life, mm-hmm. in the place.
A deep spirituality and a real joy of life.
Yes.
Those things. Yeah. I mean, you're making it sound almost idyllic.
Maybe that's because I've been away from it for the past little while.
But
either that, or I'm aware that I have to go back, so I have to be very nice when I'm talking to you.
Now,
I'm always the first person to say, by the way, that it's not a perfect church.
Sure, sure. And I don't expect you to tell us the struggles of the church or anything like that. But maybe personally, what have been some of the maybe tough learnings that you've had along the way in leadership?
As far as West is concerned,
no, just
or life
generally
in
yourself.
General.
Yeah, just generally yourself.
I would say sometimes our strong points can be our weaknesses. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I would be very consensual.
Yes.
And my own Kirk session would joke at times and say that sometimes we come perilously close actually to taking a decision.
Because you want to keep everybody on board.
Yes.
So that's a relational strength. But yet
it is, but it can be tortuous.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're always listening to that dissenting voice rather than going with the majority.
Yeah.
But over the years, it's been worthwhile to wait. If we haven't been able to take a decision one evening, we've deferred it for 3 or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. And gradually, again, by the power of God's Spirit and prayer, people have fallen into line. Mm-hmm. It doesn't surprise me that it took the Israelites 40 years to make their way to the promised land from Egypt. Mm-hmm. It's not a direct route from A to B. Mind you, when it comes to West, one of my most progressive elders, a man called Jay Russell, he's recently stepped down, still practicing as a solicitor, still playing tennis, a wonderful man. He reflects the spirit of Gamaliel, mm-hmm. from the Acts of the Apostles. If this is of the Lord, it will prosper.
Yeah.
And again, it's very much in the DNA of the place, because it has been a fresh and new and dynamic congregation. there has been this sense of always being willing to try.
Right.
And if it fails, then we learn from that and we move on.
Right. So would you say that both for you personally and for West, that you've been able somehow to maintain that freshness without just settling into a rut where things are assumed?
Yes.
What's the secret to that, Charles?
I would say it's down to relationships.
Yeah.
And in a large church like ours, it can be very frustrating. There is a sense of firefighting. You can't get back to people in the way that you would like. You're moving from one crisis to the next.
Mm-hmm.
But investing in people at their point of need,
mm-hmm.
hopefully in a humble way that isn't 6 foot above contradictions, being vulnerable, being open. When you're asking me about my leadership style, if I'm having difficulties or doubts, I will share all of that with people.
Mm-hmm. Do you mean about a decision?
Yeah, and life in general, and faith in general, and growing together.
Yeah.
I very much would say that we're in all of this together.
Yes.
Step by step, and the good days, and the days when the sun's shining, and the days when it's raining as well. I've forgotten the question. Where exactly were we?
How do you
there?
Maintain that, both as a congregation, and you as an individual, maintaining the freshness without just getting into a rut where you know you assume things and don't continue to cultivate the freshness?
Yes, that's a good question, and it's one that I would always try and keep before me, because there is a 6-inch difference, isn't there, between a rut and a grave. And you can become, because you are large, you can become a bit like a big ocean liner.
Yeah.
And you can keep going for 10, 20 years now without anybody really noticing. Yes. One of my favourite quotations is from Tozer, that the Holy Spirit could well have left the church and yet 90% of the activities still continue.
Exactly. That's it. I was just thinking of Tozer's comment, this when you were saying that.
Yeah. So that's a constant check that we need to bear in mind. Constantly returning to the Lord. We would have seasons of prayer in the place. We are still seeing people joining, people coming to us who I would say are quite often dry and broken and burnt out. Sometimes when you are operating within that kind of spiritual dynamic, for the want of a better way of putting it, somebody in one corner can have an idea and people go running that way, and then bit like geysers going off here, there and everywhere, something else happens in another part of the building and we all run in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's trying to keep up with all of that.
Mm-hmm. And what about personally, you know, for leaders who are listening to this, who may be struggling to maintain a freshness, you know, whether it's because of the busyness or some crisis that's going on?
If I were to turn the clock back, I probably wouldn't be any different than who I have been. I still would see myself very much as a people person.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, having said that, it probably took me into my 50s to realise the importance of space.
Mm-hmm.
And why it was when I went on holidays that I didn't like to see people for several days.
Mm-hmm.
My wife would tend to be much more gregarious. She would recharge her batteries by being in company, whereas I need to retreat. There's the sense of having to learn, and it's a lifetime of learning to be yourself.
Yeah.
I do feel that I've never... Sometimes we can place burden of prayer or expectation on each other. Quite a few of my meaningful prayer times would have been out walking the dog, enjoying creation all around. There is still the importance of a daily quiet time. That's indispensable.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, even when I'm praying, my mind is here, there, and everywhere, and it's very difficult to settle.
Mm-hmm.
And the day can rush at you.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish that I could be in that place where I was spending more time developing my own relationship mm-hmm. with God, mm-hmm. because the Christian life rises and falls at the point of the devotional. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Without beating ourselves up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would find a real joy in preaching,
yeah.
studying God's word,
yeah.
and allowing it to speak to me. And when I'm writing it, again, those relationships on different levels, mm-hmm. what God is saying to you, mm-hmm. what mm-hmm. he is hopefully prompting you to say to his people. Mm-hmm. One of the strong points of our Reformed denomination is the relationship between minister and people.
Yeah.
That is shaped over a long number of years. And sometimes when I'm preparing a word, I look at a sentence I've just written on the screen and I'll say to myself, oh, I wonder how that will sound like from Alan's point of view, mm-hmm. who's just been through such mm-hmm. and such an experience. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a danger in that, that you'll end up never saying anything.
Yes, yes.
But again, it's minister and people and God and minister and yeah. God and people and those relationships mm-hmm. together.
Yeah. If you were to be able to go back and speak to your, let's say, your 30-year-old self, mm. you know, or even 30 years ago, your 28-year-old self, just getting ready to launch out into ministry, what would maybe be two or three things that you would say to your 28-year-old self?
I can remember on one occasion having this lovely time with the Lord. And suddenly it was as if he was leaning over the balcony of heaven. This is the picture I saw. And he was looking down at me in the pulpit. And his arms were folded. He was beaming from ear to ear. His love for me wasn't in any question, wasn't in any doubt whatsoever. And it's always been so central to me, the unconditional love of God. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that I can do to make him love me any more, and there's nothing I can do to make him love me any less. Mm-hmm. And he was looking down at me as I was preaching in the pulpit, and this is what he was saying to me. Is that so? And it was a moment of the most incredible freedom and joy. Mm-hmm. The whole church doesn't depend on me, and yes. yet I want to give my very best to him and be the best that I can be for him. But ultimately, it's amazing that he has entrusted the church yeah. to somebody like me. Yeah. And the church will still be around long after I'm gone. So that unconditional love of God is so important. It's always been there, but as time has gone on, it has lifted so many burdens from me.
Yeah.
A much greater sense of being true to who I am.
Yes.
In Northern Ireland, Christian evangelical circles, we spend so much time beating ourselves up
yeah.
and taking a big stick to ourselves.
Yeah.
Getting rid of that big stick mm-hmm. is so important. Mm-hmm. Again, being true to who we are mm-hmm. and to the people God has made us to be. Yeah, maybe those are some of the lessons.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing, you know, in that picture that you describe, I'm actually hearing two things, because I'm hearing on the one hand this assurance of God's love. Mm. And I've actually been very interested in a number of leaders that I've spoken to over the past few years in different settings, whether from my research or in this podcast series, who've talked about the same kind of thing, you know, in slightly different ways, but come back to that same thing. So there's that sense of identity as someone who's mm. loved by God. But the other thing that I heard from you was, you know, okay, you're saying be true to yourself, but you're also saying don't take yourself too seriously, because
yes.
this whole thing doesn't hang on you.
Yes.
Is that part of it too?
That's part of it. I can remember just after I was ordained, my father was as pleased as could be. He was appointed representative elder to the General Assembly. General Assembly is made up of ministers and elders appointed by local Kirk sessions. And he and I ended up on the opposite side of a particular debate. Surprise, surprise. And I fell out with him.
Oh.
Had the most almighty row.
Oh my.
He didn't say a word. He didn't raise his voice. And again, to go off on a tangent, I've been very blessed. I can remember sitting down to write a sermon. Quite often sermons are by perspiration, as you well know, But this particular day, my two fingers couldn't keep up with each other as I typed away, and it was on the unconditional love of the Father.
Yeah.
What I didn't know was that later that day, my father, my earthly father, would die.
Oh.
And I didn't preach that sermon that Sunday, but I returned to it the following week, and I've been very blessed in a human sense. But anyhow, after we had that row, or while we were having it, he didn't raise his voice at all. And I look back at that now, and I can't even hardly remember what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
And again, to go off on another tangent, my French professor would have quite often written in the column of one of my essays, two words followed by a question mark, so what? And as I look back at that particular RG, I said to myself now, I'm never going to allow myself to get that worked up about anything that happens in church again.
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah.
The church will be there
when
I'm long since gone.
Yeah.
The church has many bumps and glitches and setbacks along the way because we are members of the church.
Mm-hmm.
But the Lord has promised that he will build his church.
Yeah.
And it's seeing that longer picture. Yeah. And not being consumed by the moment.
Yeah. Okay, which leads me to maybe the last thing that I want to ask you just as we finish this up. I've touched on it already, but in your in the time that you've been moderator, and I know you've still got a few months to go as moderator, in that time, what are you saying to encourage you about the church on this island?
I was wondering what to expect because I'm very much a parishman.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy my own congregation. I've been very blessed and encouraged during my 20 years. As I've been travelling around, it has really come home to me again and again that as a society we are bombarded by endless negativity, so many bad news stories, and in many ways we're reduced to that kind of level. We become those black banner headlines. Today we can talk about Brexit, tomorrow it might be another entirely different matter. The amount of fear that is engendered, stress and anxiety, a society that is quite broken and divided and fractured, a society without a shepherd in many ways. As time has gone on and as I've been visiting different congregations, I've been alongside presbyteries, churches together at local level, I have really had a renewed passion for the church and this whole sense in which the local church is the hope of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if our local communities are functioning as the Lord really intends them to do, where relationships are strong, healthy, together, where there is the unconditional love and the absolute truth of Jesus Christ, where the lonely and the broken and the hurting are being cared for, where people are finding new life and hope, newness of life, fullness of life. And I have been experiencing examples of that as I've been visiting different congregations, but I've had real passion and a real desire and a real vision for so much more.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see renewal coming to the traditional church. That's where my heart has always been. And I would love to find out what revival actually looks like. Somebody once said that on Pentecost, one sermon and 3,000 people converted. Now it probably takes about 3,000 sermons to convert one person. I'd love that to be turned around. So there's a desire that has been formed within me that has really deepened over this past year in office for so much more.
That's
and that excites me.
Yeah, that's terrific. So Bangor West Church can get ready for a recharged, reinvigorated minister coming back.
Yeah, if they have me back, yes.
I'm sure they will. Charles, listen, God bless you in the next few months of your role as moderator, and then over these next years as you continue to lead the church in Bangor. And thank you so much for taking the time.
I really enjoyed our chat together.
Thanks. next chance.
Thanks for listening to the Leadership Journey podcast, and thanks to Charles for taking the time to talk to us. Next week, my guest will be Rick Hill. Rick is the Discipleship Development Officer for the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Join us next week, and in the meantime, have a good week.